Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, whatever time of day you're listening. Welcome back to Talking Art. My name is Ben Goujon with Quad City Arts, and we are brought to you today by Quad City Bank and Trust. And today, I know I always say this, but I'm thrilled to be talking art with an old pal of mine, a Quad City creative who has his fingers in many pies, sartorial choices, we'll use as the correct word, the notorious TLT, Tristan Tapscott.
What notorious TLT?
I came up with that this morning that while nice. I was prepping this
All
intro.
Right, good.
Tristan, welcome to Talking Art.
Thanks, man. I have to tell you, I feel a little underdressed. I forgot that this was a video situation. And I was like, oh, well, I can, now I'm not wearing my, and people are going to know.
Right. You are, there is an actually a person
underneath the bow tie.
Under the bow tie, yeah. And the vest and the jacket and the cap.
I'm thrilled to be here with you.
I know. Well,
this is awesome.
I've wanted to have you on for forever, but you know, you usually are doing something else in the mornings. What do you usually do in the mornings?
I'm usually not a guest in
right.
the mornings because I'm usually hosting a show called Living Local. And I will say, right as we start, I have no idea how to be a guest at the moment because I'm like, what do I do with my hands? What do I do? What are you going to ask me?
I'll be gentle. Just your hands just go up. Yeah.
But yeah, that's one of the many things that I do here in the Quad Cities. I didn't even mean to do that, Ben, but it happened and now here we are.
Well, here we are. Well, and I think that brings up, like, you know, you have been in the Quad Cities basically your whole life mm-hmm. in the region, and you've done a lot of different things.
Yes. By happenstance, some of them, but yeah. also by, you know, circumstance a little bit, because if you're a creative, especially in a market like this,
yeah.
you have to do a million things to figure it out. But also, if I just did one thing, I think I'd get a little bit bored.
Sure, yeah.
And I didn't mean to go into television, but they kind of reached out one time and they said, hey, do you want to do this? And I was like, I have no experience. And they're like, that's fine. You're hired. See you Monday. And I was like, sure.
Okay.
I was like, so I'll figure that out. But that was kind of exciting because I was like, I don't know how to produce television. I don't know how to host a show.
Right.
But let's figure it out. And the challenge to me is always exciting. And if I don't know how to do it, that's generally when I say, all right, let's go.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, and your background is theater, you
yes.
know, which
yes.
prior to your Living Local, my favorite joke about it is you're the Regis of the Quad Cities.
You know, I don't think anybody says that, but you.
Well, that's okay.
We're going to make that Regis of
the Regis of the Quad Cities, the P.T. Barnum of the Quad Cities.
That is true. And that was initially said as an insult. And the person that said it, I was like, I know you're insulting me, but I'll run with it. And then I did run with it for, you know, a very long time.
Yeah. And you know, you have a background in theater. You work yeah. regularly at Circa 20.
Yeah.
As an actor, as a musician, as a director.
Yeah.
You
have that here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's such a beautiful theater.
Yeah, it's
so gorgeous. Like, I love going to see shows there
yeah.
just to be in that space.
Yeah. And it's an amazing place to perform because of the history that it has.
Yeah.
And it's easy to, like, forget how pretty it is. And then, you know, you'll be standing there one day on stage being like, I don't want to do this matinee for these old people. And then you'll look around and be like, oh, no, I do. Like,
yeah,
I'm very lucky to get to do it.
Yeah, yeah, it's gorgeous. And you've also had many of your own theater companies through
yes,
the years.
I have. That's something I've always just enjoyed doing, too. And if you want to go back, I can take you back.
Let's go back. Let's go back.
So growing up,
yeah.
my dad was a musician.
Mm-hmm.
So the arts were always kind of part of the deal. And my mom was a stay-at-home mom. But we were like latchkey kids, man. Like, we'd
sure.
leave in the morning. We'd be out all day doing whatever. I grew up in a town of 600, dude. So, like,
right.
you know what I mean? And so we'd come back at night, but we'd always find something to do. So because my dad was a musician, we always pretended to be in a band. That was, like, how it all began.
Sure.
So we would look up, like, where he was playing that night and, like, create that venue in our basement.
You know oh, that's I mean? Fun.
With various equipment that he had left over and
yeah.
like that. But we would play concerts and things. I put so many of my friends and parents in these, like, terrible, terrible shows. And then eventually it started, like, we would pretend to be in movies, or because we were constantly pretending. Like, yeah. The imagination was running wild in our family. And so between me and my little brothers, we were constantly building things and, like, pretending to be this and that. And then Backdraft was a big deal in our house.
Okay.
And so we started to, like, exclusively pretend to be in Backdraft, like, awesome. Acting it out constantly. And switching roles, by the way, nobody was ever just one. We would, you know, okay, today you're Donald Sutherland. Today
sure.
De Niro, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So one day my mom was like, oh, and I should say context-wise, Ben, like a small town like that, we had no reference that live theater was even a thing, right?
Right.
Beyond like high school and things like that.
Yeah.
Or like what we would see. And so I was like, I want to do something like that. Like, let's just pretend. And my mom goes, you know, this could be a thing you could do. And I was like, hold on. What do you mean? She goes, yeah, all this pretending you're doing, that's a job.
Yeah.
I was like, no shit. I didn't know, man. Like, this is amazing. Let's go. And so it kind of morphed from like acting out movies to writing plays and things like that and getting yeah. neighborhood kids involved and creating like a theater space in our basement. We would put
that's
doors
incredible.
On milk crates and stuff
yeah.
and like hang sheets and hang flashlights. The flashlight lighting design was revolutionary.
That's pretty impressive. Kind of, yeah.
You know, you put a flashlight on a ceiling and you put a rope down, you can adjust it. but wire hangers works best because then you can adjust it and it stays.
Sure.
Okay. So that, let that be a lesson. But one day I'm at the, I go to the local library a lot. At that time. And I should say one of my other side hustles at the time,
when yeah.
I had a used books and magazine shop in my basement that I'd open to the neighborhood kids and sell
okay.
magazines and books. You're going to ask, where did you get the books, Ben? And where I got the books, Ben, was there was always like a free table outside the library at the time. So I would take my little red wagon, load it up, Ben, wheel it back. And that's how I, anyway, so I'm there to get my,
you were always hustling.
So I'm there to get my stock one day. And I go to the bathroom, which is in kind of the back part. And I notice that there's a storage room that I had never really noticed because there's always boxes in front of the window.
Yeah.
Some of it had been cleared out and I could see into that room and see that it was mostly like an empty storage room.
Yeah.
And so I went to Mrs. Marple. I'll never forget her name, Mrs. Marple. I'm like 10, by the way.
Yeah.
So I go to her like a 40-year-old businessman. I say, Mrs. Marple, what are you doing with that back room? She goes, what do you mean? It's for storage. I said, but if I could clear it out for you, could me and my buddies use it as a theater space? And she was like, I guess. Thinking, this kid, he's never going to be back. Like,
right.
Whatever. He steals our books and he leaves.
Yeah.
I came back with a few buddies of mine. And we cleared it out and we built a little makeshift theater in there and did shows out of there in the summers.
That's awesome.
I wanted to.
Yeah.
So like the whole building theater thing was like always part of it because I was just creating the opportunities because I didn't have them.
Right.
You know, we were blessed to live near the Quad Cities. We were still 30 minutes out.
Yeah.
And so there was still a lot of opportunity, but not as much there now. But we didn't know how to get to it.
You right.
know,
you're like, 10 years old. You can't like, hop on your dirt bike. And
it's like, if we want to do this, then we got to figure out a way to make it happen. So mm-hmm. that's what we did. And that's kind of the how that all started for me. And then I just never stopped doing it. I was like, find a random place, be like, yeah, that can be a theater. Let's go.
Yeah.
And I was dumb enough to not understand how expensive something like that was.
Right.
To like talk myself out of it. Now
right.
it's easier to do.
Right.
But then, you know, even into my 20s, like when we were going to college together, we should mention that.
Yeah.
We did do that. I was still, you know, producing and stuff. But instead of like spaces like the library, I was like in Circa's secondary theater or
sure.
somewhere else, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's always been part of my deal. And so when I moved back here shortly after college to work at Circa.
Yeah.
I opened my own place then, and then that operated for a while, and then that closed like they do, and then I didn't do it for a while, and then I was like, during the pandemic, I was like, why not do this again? And we did it, and the building fell over, and that's a whole lore, you know?
Yeah. Well, and that's kind of what brings you here today, and,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
we're...
Sorry, that was a long way to get there, but I feel like it's important context.
It is, and I think, you know, something that I have always admired about artists who do this are there are... you take action and you do.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like, that's something that, you know, I tried to do. I always joke about, the production of the Stacks we did a few years ago.
It was brilliant, by the way.
Well,
one
thank
of my
you.
Things I've seen in the Quad Cities.
But I always make the joke of like, I had the idea, and then I sent out the press release so that I would force myself to do it.
I love that. That's how it happened. That's great.
Yeah, there wasn't a script. There was a rough, like, oh, this is the idea.
Yes. I love that.
You know, just
that's great.
Do it.
Yeah. That'd be a lesson to everybody out
that's
there.
That's right. Yeah. but, you know, you, and I don't want to dwell too much on the building collapse, your theater, your current theater, the Mockingbird on Main, was in the building that collapsed in Davenport.
Yes.
And you had a beautiful, wonderful little incubator space.
Yeah.
And obviously a setback, and now you're phoenixing.
Yes, and it was a bummer that happened because we did love that little space. It was like a cool, like just weird, like nothing conventional about it at all. But like it was so unique for the area. And I think that's why we were starting to see it have some success. And when that happened, I was like, oh, okay. And we almost had to deal with some other building that like immediately we could have kind of rose from the ashes or the dust. And it fell through. And then we had another thing fall through. And then I just kind of let it sit. Mm-hmm. We did one show at Black Hawk College shortly after the collapse, which was a really cool partnership. I had pitched the idea to do more, and they were like, nah. And I was like, great, I'll let it go.
Yeah.
And kind of let it go. And Black Box reached out about a show, so we did a couple shows there.
Mm-hmm.
And then we just kind of let it sit because we couldn't find the right situation.
Yeah.
And in my mind, I was like, there were a few things that popped up that I was like, that could work. But in my head, I was like, I don't want to do something that could work. Like, I want this to be able to be a success. So when Black Hawk reached out again back in the winter, I was like, okay, let's discuss it.
Yeah.
Because I was finally open to it, and I wasn't open to it for a while.
Sure.
You know, because I was still a little bit bitter about what had happened.
Mm-hmm.
Because we had put so much money and so much effort into building this thing that was, like, on its way to, like, finding its vibe and finding, like, an audience and, you know, basically my own version of Steppenwolf, which is what I've always wanted to do.
Yeah.
And then we just couldn't figure out how to do it financially responsibly, you know? And when this deal came up, I was like, this seems like a no-brainer.
Yeah.
To, like, take advantage of this situation. And it, so far, it's worked out really, really well. And Death of a Salesman is really incredible. And I will say, your performance in it, it's so good to see, like, what you're able to do, dude. It is so incredible. And it's just a really cool show, man. Like, good script, obviously.
Yeah.
You know? But the way we're doing it, I think, is interesting. And that was also the thing, too. I was like, if I do this again as a producer, I want to create things that we're familiar with, but, like, you want to see them in a new way. And that, to me, is what is exciting about the Black Box experience, or the Black Hawk experience. And Black Box, love them,
too. Yeah.
But Black Hawk is such a, in some ways, confined situation that you have to be creative.
Yeah.
And for me, that's exciting.
Yeah. Well, let's take a step back from that and lay out, because we referenced a lot of things that are happening and doing without actually naming them.
Yes.
So Mockingbird on Main and Black Hawk College.
Yeah.
Are working together.
Yes.
You are working with Black Hawk College to produce, kind of be their little theater department.
Kind of, yeah. The executive producer, Tracy Davis, who's on faculty at Black Hawk, is kickstarting their theater department.
Yeah.
And one of the ways that is kind of bringing a lot of publicity to it is us producing in there as well. So we're going to do a number of shows in there a year. We're going to do it for a year to see how it works. That's kind of the contract. And then see where it goes. But there are a lot of theaters in the country that operate this way, out of like a college or university.
Yeah.
And it's mutually beneficial for both parties.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're going to try to follow a few models that are similar. There's a few in Nebraska Repertory, Indiana Rep. A lot of those places operate out of a college.
Yeah.
And so we're going to try to follow that model and see what happens. But yeah, it's a great partnership so far. I mean, it's really incredible for us to be able to produce in a way that is not entirely worrying about a leaky ceiling or, you know, a crazy amount of overhead because a lot of the infrastructure is there.
Right.
And so then you're able to focus on other aspects of it.
Well, and that, you know, that's something that's so hard. And like, I know from my experience as a producer, like just the overhead to get a show up and to try to support a venue on your own, like especially, you know, we're I think another place where we relate is we're both kind of like hard scrabble, do it yourself kids.
Yes.
And there's not that like, oh, I've got this infusion of $300,000 or whatever
right.
to open up a venue and a space.
Well, and I think a lot of people don't realize that reality because I've had a lot of people be like, why haven't you reopened yet? Why haven't you done this? And I was like, well,
do you have the money?
I was like, it costs a lot of money. I'm still waiting on money from the money that we lost. And like,
right.
So there's so many things that people are like, well, just go open another place. Or I'll have realtors reach out to me and be like, hey, I have this spot. It's like the size of this table. And I was like,
yeah.
The amount of things you have to have in place to make it work is expensive, but also you have to have the right space. So you can't just do it anywhere.
Right.
I mean, you can.
You can, but is it going to be
worth it? I want to do it well.
Yeah.
And, you know, how do we find... And so, like, Blackhawk has become, like, a perfect partnership for that.
Because yeah.
We're like, okay, this could work. And, you know, with Death of a Salesman, it's like, that's a no-brainer way to start right now with... what the show's about and everything else. And
yeah.
I think it's a beautiful partnership that I think is going to grow in a positive way.
Yeah. I think it's a great opportunity for both parties, that's going to be very fruitful. Let's talk about the play because Death of a Salesman for me is, if not, I hate saying greatest, but like the greatest 20th century American play. If it's not number one, it's in the top three.
Absolutely.
And it's it's such a timeless classic. Arthur Miller, so many great actors and actresses have been through that cast over the revivals and the productions. And why now?
So Death of a Salesman has been a little bit of a white whale for me.
Sure.
As a piece. And I've always...
Same here.
Yeah. Like, and I've always shied away from it because it gets done a lot.
Yeah.
And it hasn't been done here in the Quad Cities for about 13 years.
Okay.
And then it was done in the round. And so it was a very different production than anybody else was going to do. But when you look at modern day economics and just kind of where we're at with the fall of the American dream and
how
people are feeling, I think Death of a Salesman so oddly speaks to the present day, even though it was written in 1949.
Right.
And I think a lot of people can see themselves in a Willie Loman, in a Biff. Mm-hmm. You know, you have this imperfect family that at the time when this was written, it was like... people were afraid to be imperfect.
Yeah.
Now it's a little more like, listen, we're all a mess, and this is part of our shtick now.
Right.
But then it wasn't, and I think so much of the dialogue is so poetic and so, like, real.
Yeah.
For what we're going through right now as a country.
Yeah.
And so when I started to think of what was that first thing going to be, when we were talking with Blackhawk, I was like, I think... it's Death of a Salesman.
Yeah.
And they're like, really? I was like, really? And it's just it's a beautiful play. And it's so simple in some ways and then so complex in others.
Yeah.
And the way it deals, for when it was written, it's crazy the way it deals with the passage of time. And, you know, Willie's, you see, it's so beautifully illustrated how Willie is losing it.
Yeah.
You know? And it's so heartbreaking in a lot of ways because I think a lot of us know a Willie Loman.
Yeah.
And, you know, people are just trying to help him. And he's always trying to win, but he's so prideful that he's not letting anybody even help him try to win.
Well, and that's the thing is he has such, you know, it's so Greek in its tragedy of that, like, I have that one tragic flaw that I am just completely blinded by and that I cannot see. And that's the thing that, and I mean, Willie has always been like number one on my bucket list as an actor to play.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you announced that you were doing it, and I only pick projects now like I've got a family, I have kids, so I'm not trying to do a lot of theater and it's stuff that's got to be something that's super challenging or like, and when I saw you were doing Salesman, I was like, oh my God. And like for 3 weeks, like I churned it around at home of just like, can I afford the time? Can I really commit and do it as well as I want to? And at the end of the day, I was like, I cannot pass this up. Like this is my white whale and my white whale's Willie.
Yeah.
And I talked to you about it, and we talked about the age, and you were like, well, you know, I think you're young. And I was like, Hoffman did it.
Yeah.
Dustin did it at 48. Yeah, Philip Seymour did it at 42. But you said, think about Biff. Mm-hmm. And I'd never thought about Biff before. Honestly, I'd never read that play and thought about Biff. And I think the last time I saw it was the Broadway revival with Philip Seymour Hoffman and Andrew Garfield. Yeah. And so it had been, you know, 12, 15 years since I had interacted with the play. And I read it this time and I was like, oh, yeah, it's Biff.
Oh, yeah.
It's Biff.
Yeah.
Biff so thank you.
Well, yeah.
Thank you.
Well, when I read it, I was like, I don't know if I can talk him into doing it. Like, you reached out. I was like, okay, I can lay this groundwork pretty well. Yeah, because when it's an amazing role. Like, it really is. Like,
well, and he's the one person that sees it.
Yes.
He is the one person that sees it.
Yeah.
Linda does as well.
Yeah.
But is willing to tuck it away out of her love for Willie.
Yeah. And you, Biff, in a lot of ways, is the audience, too.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
How they're seeing it. Mm-hmm. And the frustration that if an audience member could be like, Willie. You know, Biff is, you know, putting that out there. And I think it's such a fascinating dynamic that Biff has with his dad.
Yeah.
And in a lot of ways, I think that is similar to how a lot of us of a certain age interact with our fathers.
Yeah.
You know? And so, like, I think that's it's such a cool dynamic. And in the way you and Jim have matched up is really, really interesting, too.
Yeah, he's great.
James Driscoll. Is fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting to me about Biff, kind of looking at him from that. And we think of that post-war time as such a boom for our country, mm-hmm. you know? And, you know, I think a lot of us jump from 1945 to the 50s when everyone had money and were going to the Poconos and all those things. Yeah. But I think this is such an interesting look at that immediately post-war period that we don't talk about as much. And, you know, like seeing this character of Biff who just, you know, he's presumed, and the script doesn't lay it out, but presumably he has served in the war and has come back and cannot find his footing anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, and I think we tend to always... You know, we see the glossy side of World War II, of the war heroes coming home and getting a job at the factory and building up the middle class.
It's a less romanticized version of that, which I think is something that it's so funny. It was so smart of Arthur Miller to do it, because I think there's so many versions of this story that are like, oh, but look at this happy ending that we have.
Right.
And I think it's such a refreshing, it's an old play, so I can't say it's like refreshing, but it's refreshing to read something like this and think, my God, they didn't even try to make this, you know, a happy ending at all.
No.
And I think that's great, because not all endings are happy, man. You know, there's a lot of problems. And what you're seeing, too, is Willie and Linda and that family are right. They're not like a have, and they're not like a have not, but they're teetering, and they're neither one.
Yeah.
It's like, that's an interesting story to tell, you know, because I think a lot of us are in that middle ground, right, even right now.
Yeah.
You know, we're doing the thing and we're surviving it. But like, you're seeing this and this and you're like, my God, I could go either way at any second.
You know?
And it's so interesting, because Willie is so convinced that the next thing is going to be the thing.
The thing. Yeah.
And I think as an artist, that always hits me a little bit, because I'm always convinced this next thing is going to be the
thing. This is going to be the thing.
You know? And not that I'm as tragic as Willie.
Sure.
You know, but... I think in a lot of ways, I think anybody can see themselves in Willie Loman. He's such an iconic character in American literature in general. But I think even if you mention Willie Loman or Death of a Salesman to anybody, they at least have some reference to what it's about and what the story's trying to say.
Yeah, it's one of the few plays that really exceeds the world of theater and moves its way into the greater culture. Mm-hmm. And it's a beautiful play.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
There's lines that come out in rehearsal that I just stop and go like, ugh, How did you write those words?
One of the ones that I always come back to is the attention must be paid monologue is sure. Brilliant, but the jungle is dark but full of diamonds.
Yes.
Like that, I was like, how did you, like, that's an incredible line.
Yeah.
It means so much.
Well, it was interesting because the actor who's playing Uncle Ben in the show, Dana, he said that the other night, and all I could think of was from Game of Thrones, the night is dark and full of terrors.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, did George R.R. directly rip that from Probably. Death of a Salesman?
I mean, you know.
Yeah.
Everybody's, you know, inspired by everybody. And
yeah,
it's such a universal story. And I'm obsessed with the piece. And I cannot wait for people to see it, because even if you've seen it, you know, that's such a cliche to say you haven't seen it here. But like,
right.
It truly, like, the way you guys are playing it is so real, and there's no actory voices, and like, it's such an interesting concept with the way we're presenting it too.
Yeah.
And I'm really proud of what it is becoming.
Yeah. Well, tell us how people can see it. We should probably do that.
We should probably do that. Yeah. It'll play for 2 weeks at Blackhawk College. August 20th through 29th, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at 7:30. If you follow the Mockingbird on Main on Instagram or Facebook, there is a link to tickets on there and we have a pay what you can model.
Yeah.
And you can reserve your tickets, even though it's a pay what you can model. You can decide what your amount is on the ticket link, or you can just say, hey, I'm going to pay cash at the door. But that would be kind of an idea. And like, people want to get reservations. And so that's the way they can do that.
Yeah, and it's going to be, it's not a huge space.
No.
So definitely encourage people to make your reservation.
Yes, please.
Like, when you listen to this, and if you say, oh my gosh, I would love to see Death of a Salesman by Mockingbird at Maine on Blackhawk College, go online now and reserve those, because it's not a huge theater.
No.
But it is a really.
It's expansive, but it's also intimate at the same time, and it's the weirdest thing to try to describe.
Sure. Yeah.
I was sitting in the back row that night while you guys were rehearsing, and I was like, I still feel like I'm right there, but I'm in the back.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting space, and we're using a lot of it.
Yeah.
You know, we're not confining it just to the stage, which I always enjoy.
Yeah. I had not acted on a show in a, like, a more traditional proscenium in a while.
Yeah.
So it was, it was like, oh yeah. But it, like, for me, I know, and you know, you dance through many different hats in the world of theater and film and television. And there's something about stepping on a stage that for me is always home. Like, that's always the center. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, you talk about your mom earlier saying, like, oh, you can do this for a job.
Yeah.
And I always make the joke of, I got 2 degrees in playing dress up. And it's not wrong.
No, you're 100% right.
But that being able to be there and tell a story and work with other people to do that and explore the truths and the lies and the lives of other people is just such a magical experience.
Well, and it's a singular experience.
Yeah.
You know, and what I love about theater, you know, I saw a show last night and I was like, this will never be this again.
Right.
Because it can't.
Yeah.
It's a living, breathing thing. And if you were to come to see every performance of Death of a Salesman, they're all going to be within the same light cues and sound cues.
Yeah.
What happens between when, you know, the lights go up and when the lights go down is a singular experience that you're never going to experience again.
Yeah.
Both as an actor and as a guest. And I love that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I love working on film and television stuff. I love doing film work. There is something so magical about the theater experience that you cannot get, because you're going from A to Z.
Yeah.
And that's in a performance. But even when in a rehearsal, it is fascinating for me as a director to start and stop it. Because then I'm like, okay, but what else can we figure out for this moment? Because I know there's something else there. And I love working with creatives like you who are like, hey, what if we did this? Because I always say the best idea in the room doesn't have to be mine. It has to be the best idea in the room. And I mean that.
Yeah.
Because we're trying to get to the most real and honest part of this. Like, the other night I was like, Ben, I know why I'm having you do what I just told you. But I don't know that it, Like, I understand what I was doing.
Yeah.
What is the better option to do it? And, like, I love the play, and I love, maybe I like the process more than the final product, maybe. That's what I'm trying to say. Because it's so fascinating what people can do and what artists, like, are capable of doing when they're in this pretend, you know, deep pretend place.
Yeah.
They're like, but, and it's so cool when actors go from, like, the point where, you know, we're holding scripts and we're trying to figure out where to go to where they're just being.
Yeah.
That is fascinating to me. Like, that process and that moment when we switch from this to this is, like, magical.
Yeah. Well, and it's, you know, there's always that wave in rehearsal of, like, I've got the script in my hand and I'm doing really good. And then I put my script down and I'm the worst actor who has ever lived in the history of humankind.
Part of the deal, man.
And then you slowly claw your way out of that valley.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
But I have found, as I've gotten older, like, I am far more interested in the process than I am in the product, you know? And I like opening a show and getting a few performances in.
Absolutely.
But after a few, I'm like, okay, you know, we got to run this for how much longer? Okay, it's fine.
Yeah.
Well, you know, in a play like this, and, like, we're not having that long of a run, but, like, when you do a longer run.
Because
Because
2 weeks and six performances, I think every performance will feel that fresh because we're still going to be figuring it out.
Yeah.
You know, clear until that closing night. And I love the period that we're in right now. I don't even know where this is, so I could be talking past tense. I don't know. But that period where, like you were talking about, where we're starting to put down the scripts, we're starting to, like, figure it out. Because I think the discovery that happens in that, like, middle lane is so fascinating and can really infuse a piece with so much reality.
Yeah.
And so much, like, oh my, like, heartbreaking. And also just, like, funny things. But, like,
yeah.
There's just that we're in that pocket of, like, vulnerability right now where we're like, what can this be?
Yeah.
This is exciting, you know?
Well, and I think that, you know, talking about that process and, you know, it's so much about problem solving and, like, we have these words and we have to make them true.
Yes.
And find out why this character is saying these words and where that's coming from. And, you know, with these characters, there's such a history that they are dealing with and grappling with. And it's like, oh, he says this line because of this thing that happened 15 years ago.
And then this play that and is so true.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, figuring all of that out, whether it's in the director's chair or in the hands of an actor, like, that's what's exciting about it.
Yeah.
You know, and I assume that, you know, like a painter of, like, oh, what color is this? What color do I want this portion to be?
Yeah.
To tell the story of this, you know, that's one of the things that I love so much just about art in general is, like, all artists are making those decisions, but in different ways.
Well, theater does this beautiful thing when you're using the art analogy. Like, you know, we have the palette, the little board with all the colors and everything else on it. And then we have this finished, like, blank canvas. And I love the period where you're in that. You can see the blank canvas is there. We're going to get there, you know.
Yeah.
But we have all these colors that we're playing with. And, like, we're mixing it all around and, like, putting a little bit on. And we're like, that doesn't work. So we're going to wipe the slate clean and keep trying it out. So, you know, by the time the audience sees it, it's a finished Mona Lisa, right?
But, like,
prior to that, it's just a bunch of colors that are like, I don't know what this is going to be, but we're going to try to figure it out. And I think that's the beautiful thing about what live theater does. And, you know, an audience doesn't know that. They come in and see the show and it's beautiful and it's great.
Yeah.
But I know when I go see a show, I'm like, I wonder what the process was like of how we got to that place. And that is why, you know, it's so cool to work on stuff because it's like, oh my God, we get to be in the room trying to figure this out together. And I know there's we just exited the phase of rehearsal where we're still like, I'm playing traffic cop. We're trying to figure out where everybody's going and making sure that it flows and that, okay, while we're over here, the set can change or something like that. But, like, we're entering that phase now. It's like, ooh.
Yeah.
We can squeeze out the paint on the board and, like, try to figure this out now.
Yeah.
You know? It's not longer an outline. It's going
to
be cool.
Yeah. I am excited to dive in. I'm excited to see where we get to. And you've put together, this is one of the other things I think that I've always admired about you and is how I try to work. Like, you said, your idea is not always the best idea in the room. I think you are a willingness to say, like, I need to surround myself with other really smart, great theater practitioners to, and you know, that like theater is such a collaborative sport that, you know, you've got to like, for me, the auteur, like, this is my vision. And it just, not that it hasn't ever worked.
No, and there's a place for it. But, you know, so many places, they have a table. The director sits behind the table, says this, that, that. Nobody questions it. And this is what we'll do for eight weeks. And, like, that to me is not interesting.
Right.
So, like, I rarely sit down. If I do, it's so I stay out of the way.
Right.
Like, I force myself sometimes to be like, I just need to, if I don't, because I like to be up and, like, figuring it out with you.
Yeah.
You know, that's, like, the cool thing for me. And I know a lot of directors, they'll sit behind a table and they'll tell you what to do. And you're like, why? And they're like, that's because it looked, I want you to do it.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, but, like, let's talk about it. Like, and so I love working with people like you and, like, James and Emily that are, like, what if, though, we did this? And I was like, let's try it, because 9 times out of 10, it's the right choice.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not, like, prideful or having to go to be like, no, this is what I... Like, we changed something completely the other night because, like, my idea was terrible. What if we did this? And we kind of all figured out what it needs to be. And I was like, oh, that's the solution.
There it is.
Yeah.
There it is.
Yeah.
Yep. So, Death of a Salesman.
Yeah.
August 20 through 29.
That's right.
As I said, you wear many hats. What else is going on? What's in the future for Mockingbird? In the future, because you also do filmmaking, as an actor and also on the other side.
Just the last 2 weeks, I have done 2 film projects on top of rehearsing, on top of doing Living Local, on top of the various other things that I do for Circa and things like that. So, it's kind of been a whirlwind of like, okay, I have to get all these things done. Then I can kind of think about what this needs to be. So the short answer to the Mockingbird thing is there are things that are going to happen.
Yeah.
We're just trying to nail down exactly the details of that.
Sure.
So there are things happening. I think Blackhawk now is like, oh, we need to do more of this.
And
so largely because of the set that we brought in, we brought in like 44 old windows from homes and barns dating back to the 1920s.
That's so cool.
Because I had this idea that I wanted the whole set to be made of windows. And even my wife was like, okay.
Yeah.
She knows by now to be like, he has something. I'm not going to question it. It'll be fine. And so now that people have kind of seen that, Blackhawk is like, oh, this is real. This is not just a dude coming in and oh, he's serious. And so that's the great news. That partnership's going to continue, which is awesome. And then I'm in Rock of Ages at Circa 21.
Fun.
I've been on stage there since last fall, and I did Come From Away. And because I took some time because I was like, I need to recenter and refocus and figure this out.
Yeah.
And I was kind of focusing on some directing projects. And then I'm directing Million Dollar Quartet at Circa next year. And we'll see what else, you know. I've got submissions and auditions out, and it's just now it's the waiting game. I had a lot going on for a very brief period of time where I was like, oh my gosh, this is crazy. And it's like feast or famine in this industry too.
Yeah.
So, but what I'm finding as I, you know, I'm getting a little older, and it's a weird thing to say this because I'm not that old, like I'm only 42, but you do feel that clock a little bit, you know? And so you're like, what else do I want to do? Like, what else can I do? Like, let's make something happen. And I think for a minute there, I was kind of wallowing the self-pity of like, I'm not doing anything. And I was like, well, I'm not doing anything because I'm not making it happen.
Right.
And so there's a few film projects that I'm cooking up as well. But just trying to like get back into the mode of like, if I want to do something, let's do it.
Well, and I think that's such an important message for all creatives is like, I know in my experience as an actor, like no one hands you anything. Like the opportunities that you get are because you made them or you put the pieces in place for them to happen.
Right.
And, you know, I think it's very easy as an artist in any medium to get stuck in a place of, well, why isn't anyone giving me the job?
Yeah.
And you really have to look at yourself and be like, what are the steps I'm taking to get to put myself in those positions?
Right. And you know, there's only so many directing gigs out there. So right. Like, if you want to direct something, you kind of have to. That's what I say, like, about filmmaking right now. It's like, if you want to do something, go do it.
Right.
Because the chances, especially with the way filmmaking is right now, the chances of somebody being like, I would love you to do that, are slim to none.
Right.
So if you're wanting to do something, go do it. And, like, that's also, I need to take my own advice sometimes, you know, because I was like, I'd really love to produce theater again. And then Blackhawk said, hey, let's do it. And I was like, if I don't do this, I'm going to regret it. Even if I don't know how to do it yet. Like I said, yet, like you said, sent the press release. I said to Blackhawk, great, let's go. No idea what I was doing, how to do it. The time.
Right.
I don't even know if I have the time, but I'm going to figure this out. And then it all kind of came together in this like beautifully poetic way. And here we are.
Here we are. And I said the same thing about auditioning for the show, is if I don't do this, I'm going to regret that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just found it interesting you talking about like the ticking clock. You know, I was an actor who, through college, always played 60-year-old men. And so, my bucket list of roles were all these 60-year-old men, the Willie Lomans, the Georges, you know, all these older characters. I was like, oh, I can't wait to get older so I can play these roles. And it's funny, now that I'm pushing up against 50 and doing this role, I'm like, what are the roles that I haven't reconsidered that this might be my last chance to play?
That's a real thing, dude. Like,
yeah.
I have been wanting to be a 40-year-old character actor my whole life.
Yeah.
It's what I wanted to be in college. Growing up, I was like, oh, I'm just not old enough to do these roles now. And I'm like, oh my God, now I might be old enough to do all of these cool things.
Right.
How do I make myself more available to do that? And how do I take more creative risks? But then also, I have this thing, it's like, I don't produce things to put myself in them. Like, I just have, happened.
Yeah.
Happenstance. I ended up Glass Menagerie because somebody's mother was ill. So, you know, but I try not to be that person.
Yeah.
Either, you know what I mean? Because I don't want to be. I want to create opportunities for everybody else, not me. Necessarily. But yeah, I understand what you're saying, though, because I'm kind of in that, too.
Oh, can I do this role anymore? You know, like, I don't know. Things are getting a little thin.
Things are real thin. That's why I wear hats.
Well, I love your hats.
Thanks, buddy.
I love all the sartorial choices. Thank you for coming today.
Thank you for having me, man.
Yeah.
This was a blast. Thank you so much.
And thank you for bringing, you know, more live theater to the Quad Cities.
Hopefully we can keep doing it.
Yeah. And so
it's all happening, man.
It's all happening. Come on out to Black Hawk College, Death of a Salesman by Mockingbird on Main. You can follow them on Instagram and Facebook, The Mockingbird on Main. And August 20th through 29th, Pay What You Can.
Pay What You Can.
The ticket websites, if you want to make a reservation early, are on their social media. Yeah, and come see this really, really beautiful American classic.
That's featuring the one and only Ben Guggenheim.
I just do a little bit. So thank you so much, Tristan. Thanks once again to Quad City Bank and Trust and to my man on the mix, Mr. Josh Graves. I'm Ben Guggenheim. This is Talking Art.